Thanks, Jared. Are there other comments and concerns from the rest of the work group?
Absolutely. This is John Gore. I have a lot of problems with this measure. You know, getting back to this issue of how important it is, you know, the one thing I would ask about that data that shows that 20% figure is what time frame are these patients out from their treatment? There's no kind of time delimiter on this. You know, guys who are 10 years out and have what appears to be a very effectively treated cancer don't need an annual PSA anymore. So there's no specification of any kind of time delimiter, and there's no specification in the study of potential underuse of PSA surveillance for time. In terms of the evidence base, you know, all surveillance strategies for prostate cancer are based on expert opinion. There's no evidence that different surveillance strategies are better or worse at predicting, you know, recurrence or salvaging treatment. And the other thing that I just have a huge problem with is this is not like the radiation measures that we looked at before, the bone scan measure, where it's really quite identifiable who the treating provider is. What provider do you assign responsibility for this PSA surveillance? Is it the urologist, the radiation oncologist, the medical oncologist, the PCP? I don't even know how you assign responsibility for this measure.
I couldn't agree more. Your comments are far more erudite than mine. Mine were sort of gut, but you're absolutely right.
I gave this a big no as well.
I'm convinced by what others are saying that it should be a no.
Yeah, I think the argument is very compelling that this should not be something that we move forward.
I would add, if in fact this is within the realm of what NQF is going to do as part of its process, I would put a strong resounding asterisk on the need for a good measure in this realm.
Yeah,
although
I agree.
This measure doesn't cut it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, at the in-person meeting, we'll ask you guys to identify gap areas after reviewing all of the measures, and certainly we'll make note of that right now, that this would be one of those areas.
I just want to put that dib in because I'm not going to be able to be at the in-person meeting, so I just wanted that voice to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any other comments about this one?
We'll reach out to the measure developer for this and identify the concerns that you had before the in-person meeting to see if they have any information to provide at that point.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jared. That was great. And the next one we have is 1790, risk-adjusted morbidity and mortality for lung resection for lung cancer, put forward by STS. And we have Dr. Ross for that one.
And is there anyone from STS on the line that we could get to open their lines, Danielle?
Interview with STS, please press *0 at this time.
Well, the good news is at least when you asked for them to press *0, there was no fire engine in the background. So maybe that's a good sign. Now, this is Pat Ross at Ohio State, and I appreciate the chance to go through this particular measure. The Steward is very reputable. The Society of Thoracic Surgeons has a long-standing history with outcomes registries, and this is another example. The risk-adjusted morbidity and mortality for lung resection is quite encyclopedic. If you look at it, it encompasses both the open as well as minimally invasive approaches. The only thing I think we need to add in there is that it includes open and thoracoscopy, but an increasing number of these are now done with computer-assisted or robotic-assisted, so we really need to be sure that we're going to capture all of those as well so that they can be stratified. We're looking for all in-hospital complications, so and predominantly pulmonary complications of pneumonia, ventilator support, pulmonary embolus, but as well as some technical complications such as bronchopleural fistula, bleeding, as well as the comorbidities of myocardial infarction. And, of course, the mortality is listed as well. So I think that this is very likely to have high impact. Pulmonary resections are done in a variety of clinical settings by a variety of clinical teams that from small community programs with general surgeons to large academic centers with pure thoracic surgeons. So there's a whole spectrum of teams that do these procedures, and I think the ability for everyone to benchmark against a standard will clearly improve patient care and our ability to assess how these procedures are done. So I do think that there is a lot of opportunity there. The database itself is quite robust. This proposal is based on a 36-month report, and there were over 22,000. In fact, it was almost 23,000 cases that were able to be accessed within that. So there's a great reliability, 95% based on the audit in 2011, which was up from the year before. It was just under 90%. So I think that it's a large database. It has proven itself for reliability by internal and external audits, as well as by the number of studies that have been presented within the past 2 years at the society meetings, where the database has been accessed and evaluated. So I do think there is a lot of reliability to this. The if you look back and as you go through it, because all of these events, all of the operations have a procedure code, all of the complications are easily coded, so the retrieval of accurate information, as long as the patient is in that hospital, is very good. The mortality obviously can be captured regardless of discharge, but there one deficiency within the system, and you can't make it 100%, is that if there are late, even if within the 30 days, if there are post-discharge complications, those may not be captured. So there is one small potential hole within the completeness of the data. There is, to move on through the... I think the test results, the analytical method, are all very good. And moving down here, I think this is a good measure. There are a couple of questions on the usability. Not every hospital reports to the STS, so that obviously the hospital has to be a participating member. There is some cost to it, although it's small. And I was amused, I know Steve is on the phone. I don't know who other surgeons are in the room, but in one of the segments there was a comment that said surgeons easily grasp this result, implying that there are concepts that we don't easily grasp. So I was a little bit amused that made it into the final text. Just a small editorial comment. So I do think that this is a good measure. I think it will be easy to implement, easy to assure accuracy. But most importantly, I think this type of measure will give us a good look at a spectrum of procedures done in a spectrum of hospitals. And it needs to be done because there is a wide range of mortality and morbidity for the same procedure as we look at the number of institutions in which it's done. So I would say yes for this measure.
And we do have Zadie Reese with STS on the line.
Great.
Hello. Good morning.
How are you today?
Good morning.
Thanks
Good
for joining day. Us. I was extolling the virtues of the STS database. I hope you were able to catch that part of it.
We sure were. Thank you very much. And there was no malice aforethought for the comment of surgeons easily grasp this concept.
All right. I hope not. I wanted to edit it out, though, for the final version.
I would agree. Please do.
Does anyone have any questions for me or comments?
No, I don't think so.
My guess is that the participating centers are those who have active thoracic surgery programs, and yet the data that we may really want to access are those places that don't do a lot of thoracic surgery. So there's a little bit of an issue there. Would any STS want to comment on that?
Well, well, this is Donna McDonald from the STS National Database. We did open the database up to general surgeons, and we do currently have 15 general surgeons participating in the national database. So it's
compared to how many thoracic surgeons?
Several hundred.
Right.
Oh, yeah. 300, I think.
And it's voluntary, right?
Correct.
I think one of the challenges of the general thoracic database as opposed to our congenital and adult cardiac databases is that we don't know the denominator for general thoracic surgery because, as you've just mentioned, both general surgeons do thoracic procedures as well as general thoracic surgeons. So it's not quite as clear-cut in terms of what the actual population out there is.
So we have that actually, though, but we can gain that because we know from other databases what the total number of pulmonary resections are. So I think that it would be, if we move this measure forward, I think we always have to couch it in terms of what percentage of the total we're really capturing.
Okay.
Because you might be benchmarking the 400 centers that have busy programs, and you know it's the others that may need to be included as well.
That's fine.
Okay.
And in terms of you had a question, I think, about procedures open in thoracoscopy, and would
right, and including robotics in there.
Yeah.
Yes, we have a field. We can collect that information.
I think that might be useful for stratification down the road.
Before I begin, please make sure your sound is turned up so you can hear me. Do you hear me?
Was there anything else that you'd like us to comment on?
No, I think it's a good measure. Anyone else on the committee have a question?
I think it's a good measure too. I totally support it.
Yeah, I think it's an admirable pursuit. I think it requires some complicated abstraction, and so it's definitely a little bit of an arduous measure. But I think it's definitely an admirable pursuit. I wish more general surgeons would participate. Because isn't there some evidence that if you look at the whole denominator of thoracic surgeries, that more are done by non-thoracic trained surgeons?
Correct.
Yeah.
And even within the field of cardiothoracic surgery, there is a differentiation between those who do thoracic surgery and those who do cardiac and thoracic. So there are actually three tiers. So I do think that that's one potential limitation to this. And then the only other comment, and since we're dealing with this as lung cancer. The question is should there's no real oncologic outcome that gets measured, and if we're going to go this route, I mean, is it possible not just to have the short-term morbidity and mortality, but to include some long-term measure that says what is the oncologic difference within these groups as well? And I don't know, maybe that's time for a separate measure.
Yeah. That it's so the measure's arduous the way it is. I think that would really make it difficult.
Okay, so we'll leave it with the 30-day morbidity and mortality then.
And if you have some suggestions as to how we could attract more general surgeons, we'd be happy to hear them.
Well, I do think that that as this measure moves forward and it should be presented, as a measure and get a little space at the American College of Surgeons meeting as it comes forward here in October. I mean, that, nothing prompts participation as much as advertising and what the impact could be. So that would be a possible. I don't know whether the STS database has ever gone to that meeting or not, but it might be a useful thing.
Yes, we do. But I appreciate your comments, and it's something that we can certainly make very visible.
Very good.
Great. Thank you. Is there any more discussion on 1790? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on to Dr. Hammond and 1853. And I'll go ahead and open the floor to Dr. Hammond.
Actually, Danielle, if there's anyone from CAP on the line, if you could open their line.
I'm sorry, what was the company name?
It's the College of American Pathologists, CAP.
Right.
Oh, okay, just a moment. And I believe we have Michael Cohen from CAP.
That rumor
All
is
right.
true.
This measure is radical prostatectomy pathology reporting. The College of American Pathologists is the measure steward, and the measure is to try to define how many radical prostatectomy pathology reports contain the relevant pathology staging information, as well as the Gleason score and a statement about margin status. Importance of the measure, we've had a lot of discussion on this call about the health significance of prostate cancer and its morbidity and mortality, so there is a high impact related to the large number of men who are affected with this disease. Let's see. There have been two studies that have tried to address the regarding performance gap. One of them is a CAP QPROBE study, which showed that about 11.6% of prostate cancer reports had missing elements, and another study from the American College of Surgeons database found that there. A pretty similar amount of discrepancy. So the measure has, there is no data about disparity. It is a process measure, not a health outcome measure. There is evidence that, there's a lot of evidence that prostate cancer staging information is critical to patient care. And the basic, and there is, this has been addressed by both the College of American Pathologists as well as a consortium of groups in Australia and where a bunch of data was collected about the importance of this kind of data to patients. It's called the Cancer Protocol Review Panel, CPRP. There is a lot of evidence that this measure can be consistently gathered and collected. Let's see here. So I'm trying to think. We don't have... So there is a gap in performance. The measure is important. The reliability and validity have not been carefully evaluated as yet, but the College of American Pathologists says that this is underway. It would be predicted that the measure would be highly reliable because this data has to be collected on all patients, since cancer reporting is a requirement across the United States, and the data is collected in tumor registries as well as extracted from pathology reports. So one would expect that there would be good reliability and validity, but the data hasn't been, the data is in progress, and we need to hear what CAP says about those two studies that are going on. That's really the only important point here. It should be possible. The feasibility of the measure is, I would think, very good because of the point that I just made. It's being collected by tumor registries. In many institutions, this is an electronic measure. Certainly, the cancer registries in large parts of the country are already collecting information electronically. So I would think that the measure would be very feasible. I believe that it would be useful also for public reporting. There's a lot of interest in prostate cancer, and because of the new data out about active surveillance in men with prostate cancer, there is much more interest in the relationship of radical prostatectomy grading and results in the general population. So that having public reporting might help to make sure that we have the Gleason scores and margin status and the staging information adequately collected on patients. So I think public reporting might be something that could happen. So I think that the measure is suitable for endorsement if we find out that the reliability and validity doing audits of records actually comes forward. This is a PQRS measure that has been proposed for 2012, and as I understand it, it's a time-limited measure indicating that the those proposing the measure have 12 months to put the measure in place.
We also have Nate Shemansky and Julie Cantor.
Was there someone else had a response?
We have Faye Shemansky and Julie Cantor-Weinberg also with CAP. Your lines are open.
Thank you. This is Faye. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I don't know what the question is.
The question is to describe what is the status of the testing. It said that the reliability and the reliability and validity testing are underway.
It's in the planning stages. We've had some delays, so there's nothing much to report at this point.
But this is Michael Cohen. There has been a preliminary study with help of the AMA in conducting the sort of a feasibility study about abstracting information such as this from electronic medical records. And I think the upshot, and I think Faye will correct me if I'm wrong, is that, as Liz pointed out, this is readily feasible.
Right. The main reason why I believe it's feasible is because of tumor registry reporting. I mean, this has to be reported in tumor registries across the United States, and that's a federal requirement. So I would think that we would be able to, I would wonder if the reliability and validity testing couldn't be, we couldn't query tumor registries for that information to find out.
Also, this is Julie Cantor-Weinberg with the CAP. The, as some of you may know, the meaningful use rules came out last week, and public health reporting of cancer is one of the meaningful use stage two measures. So presumably, as that's done, this would pick up at least some of this kind of data and be another method.
Right.
So my only concern, and the reason I just put no, is just it seemed that the measure was proposed in advance of any data supporting the reliability and usability and feasibility, and it just seemed like that data would help inform a lot. And then I just didn't understand some numbers that the CAPQ probes data indicates that almost 12% of pathology reports had missing elements, but that actually, then you keep reading, and 52% of the reports had missing elements, or 42%?
This is Faye Shemansky. I can explain that. So the 12% is reports with, all reports with any elements missing, and the 52%
okay.
is referring to the percentage
of the missing
elements that...
I see. So of the missing, 52% were missing that. I see. Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense. So is this considered, would this be considered similar to the, oncology planning discussion before, where this should be sort of a never thing? So we look at 12% as being a meaningful number.
It's a meaningful number because it is a never thing. It is not acceptable for any report to have this information not available.
And just to clarify, this measure is up for time-limited endorsement because it wasn't provided with the reliability and validity testing information. Essentially, we're asking you to evaluate what's in front of you, and then if the measure meets the endorsement criteria with the exception of the reliability and validity testing, it'll receive time-limited endorsement, and the developer will have 1 year to provide full testing data, and the measure will be reviewed again at that point.
Ah, that's great. That was what my question. If we vote yes for this measure, then there is the developers will have 1 year to provide us with the important data, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. Well, I think it's really a critical measure, similar to the ones that were discussed, where it's a never event basically, and we need to change the numbers from 11.6%.
I agree.
All right.
Any other comments on this measure? Okay, well, we do need to take a break for NQF member and public comment if there's anyone on the public line. So, Danielle, if you wouldn't mind opening all lines, and we'll take any member and public comment at this point.
Absolutely. Just one moment. And all lines are open at this point.
If you have any comments, feel free to raise them now.
Hi, did you ask for a public comment?
Yes, we did.
Sorry, I couldn't hear. This is Deidre at the AMA PCP. I just wanted to note, wanted the work group members to note that Dr. Howard Sandler was on the line for the discussion of the prostate cancer measures, and he was unable to get through. I guess his line wasn't open, and he was having some issues, so he had to leave the call. But is it okay if we just send you his feedback via email along with the other data that you requested, since he wasn't able to participate or comment?
Sure. If you want to send that to us at NQF, we'll be able to disseminate it to everybody.
Okay. Thank you.
Jack.
Any other comments from the public? Okay. You can also still email us with any comments and any other comments from the work group members? If not, we'll go ahead and adjourn. And thank you all for your work on reviewing these and submitting these. Our next Lindsay will tell us our next steps.
Okay, next steps, we have three other work groups meeting throughout the week. You should have received agendas and dial-in information, and you're welcome to listen in on those calls if you would like. We'll be providing little bullet point summaries of kind of the hot key concerns about the measures to everybody at the in-person meeting, though. Other than that, we're meeting in person in Washington, D.C., March 13th and 14th. You should have received a draft agenda. We don't expect it to change, but we're just working to finalize it internally. Other than that, unless there are any questions, I don't know that I have any more information for you.
That sounds excellent.
Great.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Lindsay, can you hang on a second? I want to ask a question. Lindsay, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, Larry Marks here.
Hi. Sorry you had so many problems with the survey.
Yeah, I'm a little techno challenged, I guess, but I figured it out in the end. It was deleting the cookies. I learned what a cookie was in this process, and I learned how to delete. My cookies in the process, which is sort of interesting. So thank you for helping me with that. My question had to do with what's that?
A lesson you never wanted, I'm sure. But
no, it's fine. Now I learned something new. So my question had to do with flights back on that. On that day, is it Tuesday or Wednesday? I forget.
Yeah, the 14th.
When the meeting is, yeah. So, I want to take the earlier flight back. I guess I'll miss the last half hour or hour of the meeting, it looks like, if I did that. Is there a possibility of changing the order of some of the things? Because I guess my session is the last one.
Oh, I will look at that. Yeah, I think on that day we should be able to change the order. was
if you just move, yeah.
a little issue. What time will you need to leave?
Oh, I don't have it in front of me, but the flight, I think, was like at 4 o'clock or 4:30,
okay.
something. I think it was 4 o'clock. So if I need to leave there like by 2:30 or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, we can definitely accommodate that. I don't think that should be an issue.
Thank you. I'll get the time of the flight, and I'll send it to you in email just so we'd be sure about it, okay?
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Hey, no, thank you. I appreciate your flexibility.
Great. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Hey, great. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, Danielle.
Thanks, Lindsay. Have a great day.
You too.